Well, good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Children, Families, Finance, and Policy. Welcome. Sorry that we're starting a couple minutes late. Welcome to members of the public. We are going to start, as usual, with our back to our usual practice of taking the roll. I know that we've got one or two members, I think, who are excused, but Ms. Kahn, please take the roll.
Chair Pinto.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
She is excused.
Lee Daniels.
Present.
Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Coulter.
Present.
Representative Davis.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Present.
Representative Hicks.
Present.
Representative Hudson.
Present.
Representative Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Pettis-Vega.
We're running a little late, I think.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Okay, thanks, members. And I'm going to ask Representative Katiza Watoon, if she can, to move approval of the minutes from our meeting of March 2nd.
Mr. Chair, with one change to the spelling of my last name on the back side.
Excellent catch. We're going to work on...
I would move approval of those minutes.
Excellent. That was Representative Katiza Watoon moves approval of the March 2nd minutes with the typo in her name corrected. We'll get that spelling correct. I see it looks like the last time that your name was in there. So any other additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the March 2nd minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. And the minutes are adopted. So, members, here's the plan for today. We've got a couple of bills that have appropriations that will be laid over. They'll be laid over, and then we have the third bill on the agenda, which I think will take the longest time. There are some testifiers coming over that will be may not be here when that bill is ready to go, and if not, I'm just going to start the bill, and we'll get going on the presentation, and then when the testifiers join us, we'll get going on that. So first bill up is Representative Hassan's bill, but Representative Hansen is going to be going to present it. I don't think Representative Hassan will mind my noting that one of the challenges for her this morning was childcare, which is connected to issues that our committee works on. So very relevant to our work. So Representative Hansen moves House File 2021 to bring that bill before the committee. And Representative Hansen, I know that you were a late addition, so if you have comments about your / Representative Hassan's bill, please go for it, and then otherwise we'll turn to your testifier.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and good morning, members. I'm presenting this bill today on behalf of our bill author, Representative Hassan. And her and I share a background in social work where intervention and prevention are pillars of our profession. And so it's an honor to present this bill today because the work of Corner House is critically important to the larger efforts to continuously improve child protection interventions and assistance here in Minnesota. And I will also note that it is Social Workers Month this month, and so this is critically important to folks in the social work field, child protection overall. So Corner House is a nationally accredited children's advocacy center with over 30 years of a history in creating and training on evidence-based practices. It's a successful example of partnering with child protection and county agencies and law enforcement to provide a collaborative response for children who disclose abuse. Corner House is a trauma-informed center focused on identifying, intervening, and interrupting the cycle of violence. It focuses on improving safety, stability, and reducing trauma so children and families can thrive. Corner House is a globally recognized training organization with over 3 decades of experience pioneering a continuum of best practices in interviewing children and vulnerable adults. Not only do they train thousands of law enforcement and child protection professionals every year, they also provide training to schools, youth-serving organizations, community-based organizations, and area employers. This funding request of $1.2 million would provide safety training for more than 20,000 parents, schools, child care and early childhood centers, and community-based organizations across the state of Minnesota, along with expanding their established community call-in line for anyone who needs help. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mitzi, who's the executive director of Corner House, to tell you more about the work and the role they play in helping to make sure every kid in Minnesota has a great start and is protected. Thanks, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. That was a very impressive bill presentation for somebody who just stepped in, just filled in. I guess I should not be surprised by you. So well done. Mitzi Hobart, not sure if I'm pronouncing your last name
correctly. Yes, that's correct.
But please identify yourself and proceed. Welcome.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you so much for your time this morning. My name is Mitzi Hobart. I am the executive director of Corner House. I'm very excited to talk about the project that we are presenting this morning. We've been working on a prevention program for about 4 years and have just started to launch that and are excited to scale this for the state of Minnesota. As you know, that more than 30,000 child victims in Minnesota are connected to a report of child abuse every year, and 14 to 15% of those are consistently connected to a report of sexual abuse. The status quo of what we've been doing isn't having an impact. In fact, self-reports of abuse are rising. The 2022 Minnesota Student Survey data indicate that an increase of Minnesota's children are reporting that they have been pressured, tricked, or forced into doing something sexual or had something sexual done to them against their wishes. And percents of those just rose from 7.8% in 2019 to 9.5% in 2022, which means that 10% of our kids have been impacted by some form of sexual abuse. Corner House has been providing services since 1989 and has contributed heavily to the development of the field by developing an evidence-based forensic interview protocol, which is used by hundreds of centers across the country. And as such, we provided basic, advanced, and other trainings along with technical assistance for 30 years. As a globally recognized training institute, we have since expanded our trainings, but have always kept the quality of our training a priority. We've been vetting adult-based prevention training since 2019, and we had not find any that had met the threshold for what we wanted to be able to offer to the state of Minnesota. And so we've spent the last 4 years building a prevention program that was in partnership with communities, that was evidence-based, and that is working in partnership with organizations that are culturally focused, that have a focus of LGBTQ, and gender and ability, and so that those voices are included in our in the prevention programming that we've put together in terms of content, delivery, and partnership in terms of offering those together. In 2020, Corner House began creating that prevention program with the support of the Sauer Family Foundation, the Minneapolis Foundation, and we have since built a body safety training that provides adults with 5 learning objectives: safety messaging, turning messages into strategies, safety strategies, reinforcing strategies, boundaries, and intervening with adults or peers. Along with this training is a safety kit and guidelines to support implementation for each family so that they feel comfortable talking about this topic. It's not an easy topic for a lot of folks to be able to have that conversation, and so we're giving them not only the words to use to talk to these children and feeling comfortable in normalizing body safety along with all kinds of other children's safety. In our opinion, body safety is equally as important as bike helmets and safety belts, considering that so many of our children are impacted. And so making sure that we give parents, caregivers, professionals, and others the ability to talk about this conversation in their families was of utmost importance to us. In addition, we've developed a constellation of trainings that include online safety, adolescent healthy relationships, and assertive language. Our mental health team has developed a number of trainings to support parent education and tools to reduce anxiety with children. What we're seeing in terms of rates of self-harm and anxiety in the Minnesota Student Survey are pretty off the charts and very alarming at this point. And so giving parents those tools are especially important considering that mental health is challenging to get in front of these days. Our mental health team is also working with paraprofessionals from several school districts to provide case consultation, education on child development, problematic sexual behaviors, adverse childhood experiences, etc. And we intend to expand this work more broadly. We look forward to working with the St. Paul School District, responding to their students' requests for support as well. So all of this work is supported by ongoing safety messages that we want to continue our work with parents, with school districts, with professionals by staying engaged over the course of time. So we're not just looking to come in and do a one and done prevention program where we think that we've solved all of the issues. We know that being an ongoing partner with families and schools and professionals is the only way to make sure that we are creating a network of safety for children. And so this prevention project does exactly that. It provides those resources across the state in partnership with our friends at the training center in Duluth, First Witness, who is, when you look at the map that we've provided for you, you can see that there's a big gap there on the arrowhead, and that's because our friends and first witnesses are taking, they are the training center in that area.
And so I'd like to move to questions in the next minute or so.
Oh, sure. I'm almost done. Just wrapping that up.
No problem.
Thank you for the time. I appreciate your letting me know. And so together we would love to be able to put this prevention programming to work, as well as operating our community call line so that families have a place to call when they have concerns. Over the last year, we saw an increase of 265% in our community call lines that rose from 90 in 2021 to 365 in 2022. So we know that the more that we get out and do this prevention work, that that community call line is only going to show substantial growth. So our hope is that this committee finds that this project is of equal importance to make sure that we are protecting children from the abuse that they have been experiencing. And year over year, that's an alarming number of children. If you're looking at 30,000 children every year, that's a pretty substantial amount to impact our state. And all of that stems from that, whether it's graduation rates, joblessness rates, or our impact on health.
Thank you so much. Before we move to questions, I'm just going to note, you and I had a previous conversation where you said that the bill talks about establishing a child maltreatment prevention program, and you said there actually is an existing program.
That's right.
Just one thing, I'll highlight that for members, and probably will ask you, we'd spoken about this, that to work with staff on language rather than establishing a program, kind of describe what you're doing, and I'll probably ask maybe some information that you provide about that program to us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Good. And you're absolutely correct. It's not about establishing the curriculum that's already been built. We're ready to go.
Well, and is there a current program operating right now, though?
Yeah, we just launched it probably about a year ago. Okay. We had our launching in April of 2021, but we are working right now with a number of organizations to be providing this. So, including employee resource groups. So, like with 3M, we have that scheduled for April to do presentations in front of their entire employee groups, as well as the St. Paul School District, as well as the West Tonka School District. District 237 is we're a part of. So those things are already in motion. It's the ability to scale this project.
Okay.
That's what we're looking for.
Thank you. So move to questions. Representative Cortez Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for presenting the bill, and to Chair Hassan for carrying it. Sounds like you guys are doing some really great work, Ms. Hobart. I just kind of a follow-up to the chair's question about how the funding will be used a little bit. I was just, you know, looking at the chart that you had given us on the different numbers of investigators who have been trained across the state. Looks like you guys have been doing a fabulous job all across the state, really, in outstate Minnesota, some of the greater Minnesota counties. Clearly, just based probably on population, there's fewer children served in those areas. And I'm wondering if there is, if you can give us any guidance in terms of breakdown. It says rural, suburban, and urban. Just looking at these numbers, I mean, the number of children who have already been served in suburban Hennepin County is the greatest here on this chart. So, but then there's other, I mean, specifically mentions Anoka here in the bill language, but curious about the rest of the metro counties and then kind of outstate. Is it staffing? Are you going to bring on other staff people in greater Minnesota? How are you going to use this funding to kind of help expand the program?
Sure. Oh, sorry. My apologies.
Yeah, please.
Thank you, Chair. It's been a long time since I've testified, so my apologies about that. So, yes, we've been providing services throughout the state. We are, in terms of our response services, Corner House is primarily responding to child abuse disclosures from children in Hennepin County. That's where we've been for 30-some years. But because of our services are unique and are considered expert services, we have a lot of families that will drive down to use our services despite the fact that there are other CACs in other areas of the state. In terms of training, though, we do train throughout the state. There are two centers in Minnesota that train, and it's ourselves, Corner House and First Witness. And so we do train thousands of individuals across the area. We expect to use that same model for the prevention training that we're using. So deploying our teams across the state is what we've been doing for a long time, and it's worked really well. And so that's our intent, is to continue to use that same model, deploying our team as needed.
Representative Cortez Abatun. Okay. Nothing further? Looking for other member questions or comments? We'll go to Lee Daniels as usual. Lee Daniels?
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you for the presentation of what Corner House does. I went online, I did some research the last couple of days, and you know, I think it's really great what we do to counsel these young kids and families. And I didn't want to even bring this up, but I went to the reviews, and unfortunately the first three reviews online were not very sparkling. And then I went through like another eight or nine, and they were better. But my concern is from the first review was when there these kids and families are getting like counseling, is that in a private setting or is that in like a public setting, like a public meeting room? Because the first review says she overheard, the one lady said, I overheard things I should have never heard.
Lee Daniels, can I clarify, when you say reviews, are you talking about like the online reviews? Like
yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about whenever I read hotels and restaurant reviews. There's a anyway.
Oh, yeah. But, well, yeah. And, Chair, I appreciate that because my concern is we go back to safety. We don't want to have people hearing conversations that they shouldn't be hearing.
Okay.
And I just want to make sure that maybe that's been addressed. This is a 4-year-old review, so maybe that's been addressed. That's what I was trying to.
We know those reviews are. But, yeah, Ms. Hobart, concerns about confidentiality, people overhearing things. Can you talk about what your protections are there?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Absolutely. As an organization, you know, we are in a small private setting, and so our lobby is very small. We've done all of the work that we can to be sure that families have absolute privacy when they come to our organization. We take just an incredible amount of energy to provide the setting for every single child that walks in the door. So whether that's light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, whether or not that child feels like they want to roam the building or not roam the building, honestly, we use a telegram to communicate quickly that a child is coming through the rooms. Please close your doors so that they can be in a setting that's as warm and welcoming to them as possible. And we do not usually have more than one family in our lobby at a time. And if we do, we try to stagger them to the best of our abilities. But, no, we try to make sure that we are ushering families into different settings so that they have absolute complete privacy.
Lee Daniels, follow up.
Yeah, that was my main concern is if I'm in the waiting room and I have this conversation going on about it's really, you know, those conversations could be very stressful, very, very, traumatic. And that was unfortunately the first one that was on the list on the website. But that was my main concern. And then also, you know, we have more grants going out, and we've had the conversation many, many times about if the grants are going to be secure, protected, guardrails, whatever you want to call it. And I know you'd, Chair Pinto, you had said something like 2018, 2019, there were some guardrails on there. Can you recall some of the things that were put in place to try to keep grants from going to the wrong people?
I'm trying to think of what you're referring to, Lee Daniels, something in 2018, 2019. You talk about
that was during the CCAP deal.
Oh.
And
a little bit different, I think. I mean, in this case, actually, of course, if we pass this, the funding would be going directly to Corner House, and then, you know, but I think what you're referring to is in the Child Care Assistance Program, you know, a number of program integrity measures going into place there. It's a little bit different, but maybe Ms. Hobart, if it's okay with you, Lee Daniels, she could just talk to us about kind of how we will know if they get this money that it's going to actually be used for what it's supposed to be used for. Is that helpful? But Lee Daniels, your question.
Yeah, that would be fine. Or our reporting system, you know, after such and such a date.
Yeah.
It's a very short bill. It's only like 5-6 lines long. So if there's going to be a reporting period after the grants are issued, just to make sure we have a, you know, paper trail and make sure they're going to the right reason, the right people, and that was another one of my concerns. So,
yeah, good, Ms. Hobart, and we're going to wrap up any second now, but Ms. Hobart, maybe you can provide some reassurance or information to Lee Daniels on his point.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pinto. Absolutely. Corner House is an organization that receives, national and state funding as an organization and are very familiar. I am longly familiar with reporting out on our progress as well as to have very strong fiscal oversight of all of our grant and our outcomes that we are expecting for those. And so right now we usually report on a quarterly basis how our outcomes are going, how the funds are being expensed. Our tracking systems internally are stellar in terms of making sure that the funds are going and being spent appropriately. So we have absolute transparency in those funds as well as the outcomes.
Okay, Lee Daniels.
Yep, that's okay. That's great. I just appreciate the work that they do and counseling these kids who have been traumatically affected, and just want to make sure we're protecting privacy, number one, and then the funds, number two, make sure that it works the way it's supposed to work.
Thank you. Good stuff. And I'll just note, as Ms. Obad, you and I spoke about, yeah, I'd love to get information to share with the committee regarding how things are working right now, and so we can do some follow-up together on that, but I really appreciate your work. Representative Hansen, as the bill author substitute, any final comments from you?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I really support this bill, and like I said, it's Social Workers Month, and so the background of social work, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the importance to our profession of improving and doing all we can to support our child protection system to make sure every kid in Minnesota has a great start. So thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Hansen. Yeah, thank you, Ms. Hobart. Thank you for your really, really important work. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
So with that, the chair lays over House File 2121 for possible inclusion in a budget bill. Yes, Representative Breyer, please head on up. We'll ask, I guess, Representative Cortez-Witun, if you're willing to bring House File 1385, to move House File 1385 to bring that before us.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 1385 to be before the committee.
Thank you. And since Representative Breyer is not on our committee, that was why that was necessary. And Representative Breyer, please dive on in and begin preparing your presenting your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm happy to have another strong set of programs to present to you after that great first hearing. Yeah. I'm here to talk about House File 1385. It's a bill that provides funding for the Minnesota Community Action Grant Program. Program provides flexible funding for Minnesota's community action agencies and most tribal nations. The bill includes two appropriations, a one-time appropriation of $2 million for fiscal year 2024, and also an increase to the base of $4 million for fiscal years 24 and 25. Funds are allocated by formula based on population and poverty level. Community action grants are highly flexible funds. They can be used to meet emergent and growing needs in their communities. We saw this in COVID times and throughout the recovery from the pandemic as agencies had to quickly pivot. And it also happens frequently with natural disasters, flooding, and other community economic hardships, such as a big employer closing. Community action agencies do needs assessments every 2 to 3 years to help with planning and ensure visibility into changing needs. And these grants, they make a difference. An agency in southeastern Minnesota spent over $400,000 on rental assistance during COVID-19 to keep people safely and stably housed. And as you can see in your handout, up on the Iron Range, a boot drive provided 600 pairs of shoes to kids in need and over 700 pairs of boots to keep kids' feet warm in the winter. With additional funds, agencies will be able to help provide access to transportation through car repair programs, transit support like bus passes or help with car insurance. They'll be able to fund emergency services for people experiencing homelessness or housing instability. Additional funding for emergency food programs, a key need right now, and water and utility bill assistance. With that, I'd like to turn it over to our testifiers for additional information about the program. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, please. I think Annie Shapiro, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Annie Shapiro, and I'm the Advocacy Director for the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, the state association for the 24 community action agencies in Minnesota. As a quick reminder, community action agencies serve people with low incomes in all 87 counties with programs and services like Head Start, energy assistance, housing, weatherization, food assistance, services for older adults, and so much more. As Representative Ryer said, the Minnesota Community Action Grant, we call it MCAG, is the backbone funding for community action agencies. It's a flexible funding source that allows agencies and tribal nations to meet the emergent needs in their communities that are specific to their local communities and to quickly pivot to the emerging needs and growing needs that happen during crises. These needs are identified, as Representative Ryer said, every 2 to 3 years through needs assessments that are done at the local level. And this was incredibly important during COVID. Representative Ryer shared a few examples of some of the ways that agencies used their flexible funding during COVID to meet the specific needs in their communities. A few others that I just wanted to highlight are that agencies used their flexible funding to ensure that older adults that were socially distancing were able to connect through technology by providing things like iPads and laptops to make sure that older adults had social connection. And a lot of agencies used their flexible funding to purchase PPE for their Head Start teachers and classrooms in order to ensure that the kids and the teachers could come safely back to the classroom. Although society is starting to move on from COVID-19, we know that people with low incomes are recovering the slowest economically from the pandemic, and the needs are still great across the state. Last year in 2022, Minnesotans visited food shelves 5.5 million times, which was 2 million times higher than in 2021. We have a child care crisis across the state, which you all have heard about a lot in this committee, and that's especially true in greater Minnesota. And we're facing an aging population, especially in greater Minnesota, that's going to continue to age, and we do not have the services necessary to help people age in place. Community action agencies and tribal nations are well poised to meet these needs, but they need additional resources to have the flexibility to meet the specific needs in their communities and to pivot quickly to whatever emergency happens next. And so I urge you to support HF 1385, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you so much.
Ms. Shapiro, thanks for your work. I think there's a second testifier, Jeff Hansen. Please identify yourself as once you get settled in, and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jeff Hansen. I'm the executive director of the Scott Carver Dakota Community Action Agency. We provide key services to folks with low income across our three-county service area, Head Start, energy assistance, housing, stability, food insecurity, and senior meal delivery, and we do pop-up food distributions throughout the three counties as well. Scott Carver Dakota CAP Agency is extremely grateful for the support the MCAG dollars offer. That grant allows our agency to support the programs that would not remain viable without this funding. For example, the CAP agency offers 24/7 support for our crisis nursery serving all children between the ages of 0 and 10 in Scott and Carver counties. Our crisis nursery advocates provide help in securing a temporary placement for their child or someone to talk to when experiencing a challenging situation in the home. Another program that is supported through the MCAG dollars is our CHORE program for seniors. This program is designed to allow seniors to age at home, and we will provide different types of help in-home services such as yard maintenance, snow removal, house cleaning, and small home repair and maintenance projects. Our agency also utilizes these fundings to help support our housing staff in various ways. This would include providing additional funding to support our temporary shelter program, helping individuals and families prevent eviction through financial assistance, which would include damage deposits and first month's rent. We have also used this money to help provide our staff with wage increases to help improve to improve a livable wage and keep them from leaving for other high-paying jobs. We thank you for your time today in this bill and increasing this critical funding to help low-income Minnesotans across the state. I also want to especially thank Representative Ryer for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Thanks for your work. Thanks for your testimony and for your work, too. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? I realize that I think I missed that step on the first bill, so if and when it comes back up, we'll make sure we get extra testimony then. Okay, so not seeing anybody, so we're going to move to member questions and discussion. And Representative Hicks is up first.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill forward. I know in southeastern Minnesota, Three Rivers is, and FEMCAC, just south of us, are both very, very vital. I know when I was working in a local nonprofit, my staff used Three Rivers and FEMCAC a lot to meet a lot of really unique needs that we couldn't figure out how to support. In other ways. And so it it is just such a wonderful program, and I know how committed they are to our community, and it looks like from this wonderful handout we have that it's that way across the state. So I just wanted to express my support and hope that we can make sure that you are funded in a way that allows you to do the best work across all 87 counties. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Before I move to the next testifier, I want to note there's a sheet about community action that's actually in the HF 2320 packet that I think is in the wrong spot. So so folks may want to grab there. It's about AEOA, and it does look like it relates to community action, so just want to make sure it's with the right bill. So Representative Lesnikar, you are up next.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and Representative Ryer. I love to see this information, and I guess one of the questions I just have for Representative Ryer is, or the testifier, is there any, are those CPAP, or the CAP agencies that have not had any flags or concerns, or is there a formula of how we award the money? You know, for, I see there's, I think, 11 tribal nations and various, you know, parts in the state. Is there some formula that allocates this? I'd like to learn more of how that is. And then my second question is, if there's an issue, and then what the formula is for outstate versus the suburbs versus Minneapolis-St. Paul, how that's looked at for how we allocate the resources, because I know the need is large everywhere. So I'm just curious as how that works. Thank you.
And I don't know if Ms. Shapiro may be the best person to answer that.
And it's percentage.
Mr. Hanson.
Thank you, Chair. Percentage of population in poverty levels. So the percentage of that population in the poverty levels within there. So that's how that's determined. That's.
Yeah, you can. I mean, if Ms. Shapiro, if you've got a little more information, perhaps you make sense to bring you up, if that's okay with Representative Ryer. And thank you, Mr. Hanson. So, yeah, Ms. Shapiro, if you can please provide an answer to Representative Lesnikar's question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think it's a really good question. So it is based on population and percentage of population in poverty across the state, but there are definitely some outstate and greater Minnesota agencies that are receive a lot of funding. AEOA in your area receives quite a bit of funding. They're quite large. And then there's some agencies based in Willmar that serve nine counties and Three Rivers, which Representative Hicks just mentioned. So there are agencies in greater Minnesota that receive quite a bit of money, but it is allocated as a percentage of population and poverty in that area. So some agencies serve lots of counties and big geographic and population areas. So that's how it's decided.
Representative Lesnikar, follow up.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you to the testifier. My second follow-up question is just thank you for that information. If a agency is, if something happens, because obviously we want to make sure we have no waste and abuse, and we've had situations happen. So if something happened in any section of the state, if it was in my district of where I represent, which is AOA and Community Action Duluth, those areas, but regardless of where it happened, if that was to happen, would there be some type of a fine to the agency, a penalty for not receiving the same formula of funding so that they wouldn't increase in their funding until they are rightfully corrected, while the money would go to the other ones that are have systems that are solid? I'm wondering what the process is for that.
Ms. Shapiro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think there's probably folks at DHS that can speak better to exactly how they do some of the monitoring, but they do monitoring of all of the agencies every year. And if there are issues that arise, they are put on monitoring plans or quality improvement plans. That's required by the federal government, actually. And I'm not exactly certain about the penalty or fine piece, but we can check in with DHS about that.
It's Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you for your follow-up. My question is just, you know, in a situation of a fining status, I'm familiar with that from healthcare. And so if there are deficiencies, then there's a fine and or money's not going to be coming into the system. So I would hope that that is the safety net we have. I'd like to get some more information on that because if in northern Minnesota or central Minnesota or southern Minnesota, that there is fraud, that I would not want money going into that program, because what it does then is take away from all the fabulous programs going on, which represent 80% of Minnesota. Always it's 80-20. There's going to be 80% great outcomes, 20%. Maybe they need to have systems. But if we have an identified area, because that happened before, 2017, not that long ago. And so I want to make sure that we are putting a lot of money in programs that if there's something identified, that there's immediate, that is not an area that we're going to increase funding. And maybe we need 5 years where there's no more flags before money goes into that area, until we can assure that 100% of the money is adequately being used for the service. So I would just hope to see that those safety nets are there to have prudent use, because there's no doubt we have need. I just want to make sure it's going to what we're doing. Thank you.
Yeah, and Mr. Shapiro, I'll invite you to provide some follow-up information as maybe what you could do on that. I'll go to, so I do want to wrap up pretty quick here. I've got Representative Hicks, and then we'll go to Lee Daniels. Representative Hicks. Oh, perhaps I was wrong about that. No. Okay. Not. Sorry. Okay. Misunderstanding. Okay. So then, Ms. Shapiro, I will ask you if you can just to, if you have follow-up information in response to Representative Zelizikar's question, that'll be great. Lee Daniels, to you, as usual.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Representative Zelizikar stole my thunder, so I was I was going to talk about the guardrails and to make sure the money goes where it's supposed to. So I won't repeat all that, but. Great program, and I just appreciate the effort on Representative Ryer to do that. I noticed the funding had increased quite a bit. I noticed the just kind of a general statement. The pace has been extremely fast this session. A lot of spending going on this session, and I think I mentioned a couple times before, it'd be nice to pump the brakes and catch a breath of air and maybe make sure we're doing everything correctly, but the intent of the bill I like.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, and I know we've had a back and forth about this before, Lee Daniels, but just a reminder that this bill's being laid over as the first one was too, and so budget bills will be out, and this is, to my mind, is the same as it's sort of always been. The committees consider proposals, and then they come out with budget proposals in late March, so, but, and Lee Daniels, feel free to respond, but
I kind of agree, but the number of bills coming through has at least doubled, and that's a tough job for our revisers and our nonpartisan staff, and you know, it's just it's a heavy load for them. So that was part of the reason, like, to just slow the pace down a little bit. I mean, we have what over 3,000 bills, I think, was.
Yeah, no disagreement there. Yeah. And I think almost all members have been guilty of that, if in fact it is something to be charged with.
Yeah.
In terms of introducing a lot of bills, but appreciate the comment, and we'll just sort of keep on doing what we can. So, but thank you, Representative Ryer. You get the final word on your own bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your consideration. I appreciate it, and we'll leave the floor to the next bill.
Thank you so much. And we can see from this Minnesota Community Action Partnership page that there really is powerful work being done all over the state. So thank you, Representative Ryer, and thanks to your testifiers. And with that, the chair lays over House File 1385 for possible inclusion in a future budget bill. So I'm going to head up to the front. And again, we've got this situation where we're going to be awaiting some testifiers, but we're going to get going with the bill in the meantime. I'll hand things over to Representative Katiza Witun.
I haven't had enough coffee to make sure I don't spill my coffee.
Always something, Madam Chair.
It's okay. Members, the next bill that we have on the agenda for today is House File 2320 from Chair Pinto. Chair Pinto, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move House File 2320 for referral, re-referral to, and my...
Trying to recall. Education Finance.
Education Committee on Education and Finance, Madam Chair, and then I do have an amendment.
Very good. You can go ahead and move the A2 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And then the A2 amendment just makes a couple of tweaks to the bill, most particularly is response to a concern expressed about making sure that the lived experience of children, youth, and families are in fact centered in the aspects of the department's work. And so I ask members to adopt the A2, and so I do move that.
Chair Pinto moves the A2 amendment. Members, any discussion or questions to get the bill in the shape that the author would like? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. So the A2 amendment is adopted. And Chair Pinto, go ahead and tell us how House File 2320 as amended.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. So, members, House File 2320 is an initiative from the administration to establish a new Department of Children, Youth, and Families. While a new proposal, really, the history of this is quite long at this point. There's been proposals to have, in particular, an agency focused on the needs of young kids that's been proposed and has been studied for a number of years. And I'm extremely excited that the administration is coming forth with this proposal to include not only programs relating to young kids, but programs that center, again, kids and young people and families all around. There are going to be testifiers, Madam Chair, coming from the administration to talk further about the bill, but I'd like, if it's okay, to ask Ms. Mock from House Research to walk through the details of the bill, kind of page by page, as we await those testifiers to make sure that members are familiar with the bill.
Certainly. We will we'll start with a House Research walkthrough from Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to start with Section 1. And members, you do have a bill summary in front of you or in your packet for House File 2320. So Section 1 adds the Commissioner of Children, Youth, and Families to the list of commissioners that comprise the Children's Cabinet and removes a director from an agency that was abolished in 2003. Section 2 adds the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to the definition of agency for purposes of statute governing state and tribal government relationships. Section 3 adds the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to the list of agencies designated as departments of state government. Section 4 applies various requirements that apply to commissioners of state agencies to the new Commissioner of Children, Youth, and Families. Section 5 adds the Commissioner of Children, Youth, and Families to the list of positions with salary limits that cannot exceed 133% of the governor's salary. And Section 6 adds the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to the list of agencies that may designate additional unclassified positions. Section 7 starts with creating a new chapter that will be for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So Section 7 has definitions for commissioner and department for children, youth, and families. Section 8 establishes the new department, and it provides that that the transfers that I'll talk about in a few minutes in the bill, they must be conducted in accordance with statutory requirements for transferring power and restructuring personnel and agencies. And Subdivision 3 establishes timelines for transferring personnel to the department and provides that the transferred employees retain the employment status, bargaining unit, civil service protections, and any coverage and under any collective bargaining agreements that they had prior to the transfer. So they'll take that with them into the new agency. Section 9 lays out the duties of the new commissioner of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So Subdivision 1 provides that the department is under the administrative control of the commissioner, who is appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. Subdivision 2 lists a whole lot of duties for the new commissioner. And then Subdivision 3 talks about data. So Clause 1 allows the department to access data of any classification held by other specified state agencies, counties, and school districts, provided that data is not prohibited by state or provided that access to that data is not prohibited by state or federal law. Clause 2 is the reverse, allowing these other specified state agencies to have access to any data of any classification held by the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, provided that access is not prohibited by state or federal law. Clause 3 provides that the data shared under the subdivision, they all retain their classification statuses from the agency holding the data. And Clause 4 provides that the data may be shared with and used by specified agencies without the consent of the subject of the data. Section 10 directs the commissioner to establish and enhance computer systems needed for the operation of the programs that will be administered by the department. And it outlines how the costs incurred for developing, maintaining, and operating those systems will be distributed among counties and state agencies. Subdivision 2 creates a state systems account for the department in the state treasury. And in that account will be money collected for the computer programs that are that the commissioner will establish and maintain. And the money in the account and any federal matching money will be appropriated to the commissioner for any computer systems maintenance and establishment. Section 11 gives the commissioner rulemaking authority and directs the commissioner to amend rules with approval from specified state agencies to make any conforming changes related to transferring programs to the new department. Section 12 makes several conforming changes related to the Commissioner of Children, Youth, and Families getting that authority to establish and enhance computer systems for the operation of the department. And Section 13 is similar, makes conforming changes to statute related to things being transferred to the new commissioner and department. Section 14 directs the governor to appoint a commissioner designee of the new department and provides that the appointed person becomes the governor's appointee for commissioner on July 1st, 2024. And I should note all the provisions I've gone through for establishing the new department go into effect on July 1st, 2024. This appointment of the new commissioner designee goes into effect on July 1st, 2023. And then, as I said, that person will become the commissioner on July 1st, 2024. And then Section 15 is where there's the identification of all the programs that will be transferred from other agencies to the new department. So it provides timelines, Subdivision 1 provides timelines and procedures for those transfers. And then starting in Subdivision 2 identifies the programs that would be transferred from the Department of Human Services. Subdivision 3 identifies all the programs transferred from the Department of Education. And Subdivision 4 then identifies the programs that would be transferred to the Department of Public Safety. And these transfers, this section goes into effect July 1st, 2024. And that would be the earliest the transfers would take place. But some of the programs are under federal administration, so those programs wouldn't be transferred until there was federal sign-off. Section 16 is a reviser instruction directing the reviser and state agencies and nonpartisan staff to work out any changes to statute or rules to because of establishment of the new department. And then Section 17 provides two appropriations. The first one is $5 million in fiscal year 2024 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Management and Budget to support the creation of the new department. And it allows the commissioner to transfer that money to other agencies as needed. And then the second appropriation is for $2.37 million in fiscal year 2024, again from the general fund to the Commissioner of Management and Budget to set up and transition the programs to the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And so members, as Ms. Mock kind of alluded to it at several points there, the transition plan here is, and I know we're doing this bill presentation kind of backwards, so my apologies, because we're going to talk about the reason for it after we talk about it, how it actually happens. But the plan is for the administration to spend the next year preparing for the establishment of the department, which is scheduled for July 1 of 2024. That's when the commissioner is named. No programs will have moved by July 1, 2024. No programs move on that date. Rather, over the following year, from July 1, 24 to July 1, 25, is when programs move over. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge doing this because we want to make sure that we do it right. And so what we're passing now is the proposal to have to set up over the next year a process to then figure out how the programs move in that second year. So just so we're kind of clear about the transition process. The other thing that I will note as we await our presenters, is the, and I alluded to this before, is how this is in a broader context of past efforts. There was a report in 2021 that the legislature ordered looking at governance of early childhood programs, and Minnesota Management Budget looked at that issue and found that there are a number of states that are transitioning, that are have been, there's a clear trend around the country to consolidating programs relating to kids and especially young kids. At this point, I think it's maybe more than half the states that are doing that. And that followed on a series of reports back in the early 2010s and before, saying that when you consider the programs that we look at in this committee, and this is why the bill is starting in our committee, we have this challenge of having programs that do similar things that are in Department of Education and Department of Human Services, and that ends up having a pretty negative impact, as past OLA reports have shown, on kids and on families and on people doing the work, on teachers and providers. And so having a core strategic focus in that way seems really, really useful. So in any case, I'm expecting, as they say, any second now, folks will be walking in. I'm not sure, Madam Chair, if it makes sense to see if there are initial questions. I hate to sort of start the presentation that these folks are going to be doing without having them actually do it themselves.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I wonder if any members have. Oh, look at this. Here we are.
And here we go. Come on
Welcome,
up.
Welcome, Director Bailey.
You sit in front of the baby. What do you think girls like an operator?
Just had a little job.
Okay, no, it's all good. Yeah,
feel free to settle in and introduce yourself when you're ready.
I can. All good. So we walked through the bill. We did all kinds of stuff. So yeah, all good. Okay.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Erin Bailey, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner at Management, Minnesota Management and Budget, and the Executive Director of the Children's Cabinet. I'm also the parent of a two-year-old that was up all night sick and just had a little jog, so appreciate your patience with me. The Children's Cabinet, housed within Minnesota Management and Budget, refers to the convening of the state's commissioners around children and youth. I'm excited to be here today with my colleagues to present the Walls Flanagan proposal to create a new cabinet-level Department of Children, Youth, and Families through a funded, thoughtful transition process. This proposal reimagines state government by providing an opportunity to better center children in our state government systems.
That should work.
I will be presenting today with Bobby Burnham, MDE, Assistant Commissioner over the Office of Teaching and Learning, and Tiki Brown, DHS, Assistant Commissioner for Children and Families. As key members of the Children's Cabinet and leaders charged with improving the lives of Minnesota's children on behalf of the Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and Commissioners, we have co-led the decision to propose a child-centered agency and developed the proposed scope and transition office and plan. Our presentation will include background information on the focus and need, Minnesota's history of governance approaches and learnings from other states, the proposal to fund and create a transition office, and an overview of opportunities in creating a new child-centered agency. We're excited about the moment that we're in, about what is possible. If we want different results, we truly need to do things differently. The why behind this proposal is the 1.4 million children that live in our state. One in four Minnesotans are children under the age of 18. There are approximately 650,000 Minnesota families with children. A third are lower income families. For a family of four, this means a family making less than $53,000 a year. Children are our most racially diverse group in the state. One third of all children in our state are Black, Indigenous, or other children of color. Yet we do not have a clear cabinet-level agency whose job is to focus on this population and the challenges before them, their families, and communities. These programs and the systems that support them exist within other structures with many competing priorities. Yet children are Minnesotans' priority. They're our future, and our overall well-being as a state depends on the success of young Minnesotans. To ensure Minnesota is a top place to live, our state needs to focus on preparing this next generation to work and lead in a rapidly changing world. And even though this is true, and one quarter of the state is under 18, our state systems, funding, and leadership structures do not have a special focus with the well-researched whole family intergenerational approach. For years, and in some cases decades, we have heard from the early childhood community that there needs to be a dedicated agency. We've heard that DHS is too big. We've heard that youth need a clearer voice, that we need strategies focused on prevention. Families and local service providers and those who work with them have been asking for coordination, for engagement, for culturally responsive programs, and for leadership. The administration has doubled down on this work, listening, learning, and leveraging the Children's Cabinet and its leaders to center children in decisions and improve coordination. We've seen some successes, but we've also continued to examine our governance structure. With learnings from governance reports, cross-agency work, OLA reports, and other states, the case for alignment is clear. It's time for Minnesota to create an agency centered on children, similar to governance structures in about half of the states across the country. There's a history to build off of and learn from in Minnesota. In 1995, the legislature created the Department of Children, Family, and Learning. The department was created to replace the Department of Education with a broader focus and encompass K-12 education in its scope. In 2003, the Department of Education was reestablished and distributed programs back to their home agencies. Challenges continue to be lifted up by families and communities. And in 2010, a task force recommended a cabinet-level office for early childhood. The Office of Early Learning was created later. There are learnings from all of this, and the proposal before you is different, and it is more in line with states across the country who have been embarking on change over the last decade. Over the last 4 years, our state relaunched a robust action-oriented children's cabinet and received a federal preschool development grant, starting with an engagement process to develop a family-informed statewide early childhood strategic plan. These efforts have built for a moment of now, with feedback and partnerships and strong alignment across leadership in the state to move along a more coordinated continuum as other states have. As I mentioned, there are national trends to be aware of. Chair Pinto's committee in the past years has heard from a number of these national experts. Over the last decade, states have been moving to a more child-focused agency, some focused on early childhood specifically, others including a more whole family lens as we have done in our proposal. As our 2022 governance report stated, related to children's programs, there are three models to consider: consolidated into new agencies, consolidated into existing agencies, or depending on coordination. Several states, more states, are now in the process of transitioning from coordinated to a more consolidated model of governance. Washington State is one model that we have examined and use it as an example of consolidation across a broader spectrum of children and family programs. The state consolidated early childhood economic supports and child welfare services. Their agency was established in 2017, consolidating services from the Departments of Health, Human Services, and Early Learning. The transition to consolidation has streamlined the focus and presented opportunities for innovative service coordination. Our 2022 governance report was clear about what states need for governance change, with careful attention to planning with dedicated staff, resources, and time, engaging with leaders and securing buy-in, determining funding and resources needed. Considering these factors from governance research, along with results from engagement across state systems and structures, and from hearing from families, service providers, tribes, counties, local partners, and other states, the governor and lieutenant governor have put together a proposal for the new Department of Children, Youth, and Families with a transition process and timeline that provides the resources and time to get it right and to adapt with all of you as needed. I'll transition to the proposal. The why, as I alluded to, the governor and lieutenant governor are proposing this new structure to enable a recognizable public face and a clear front door in the state's quest to prioritize children, to improve communication outlets, to increase opportunities to maximize and coordinate funding, align outcomes, and convene leadership, to consolidate holistic supports, and to sharpen the focus of current agencies. In accomplishing this, why our leaders have agreed to hold these principles. I'll focus on just a few: clearly having a whole child family focus, a focus on a child through their lifetime, services that improve ease of access and navigation. And in living this out, the proposal creates a new agency that would not begin until as early as fiscal year 24 and includes the consolidation of early child care and early learning programs, family-focused community programs, economic support and food assistance programs, and youth opportunity and older youth investments. You've done a walkthrough of the bill language. I'll just touch on a few key pieces that I think are important. The proposal funds dedicated people, time, and process, engagement, ongoing meaningful engagement with families, youth, and local service providers will be essential. The language includes employee protections. The goal of this effort is to focus, prioritize leadership to lead to better outcomes for children, staff, and partnership with them is critical. The language directs the transfer of core programs between July 1, 24 and July 1, 25. It is not all immediate on July 1 of 24. Significant thought went into the core programs listed in the legislation. The core of the proposal is an elevation of Children and Family Services at Department of Human Services. The proposal then consolidates other programs within this, and the bill language and existing authorities allow for adjustments to these core programs. But we truly believe that this is the right first step. This is a big undertaking, one that is urgently needed, and we know that in dialogue with Minnesota families and you, additional changes will occur. The focus of the bill funds an implementation team and transition fund, obtaining authority and resources to support creation, alignment, and launch of a two-year process of moving core programs to the new agency. The transition will be established on July 1 of this year and will consist of a team at Minnesota Management and Budget that's responsible for leading the establishment of the new agency, planning for the transition of programs to it, including elements related to budget, finance, legal, human resources, IT, policy, public engagement, and project management. We'll leverage the transition funding for the purposes of building the shell of a new agency, including staff, space, IT, equipment, and supporting existing agencies with transition costs. The agencies are continuing to work on refined costs for these functions. We know we have, again, done a walkthrough of the bill, but I think it's important for a full list of the programs proposed to be seen in plain language for the sake of clarity and transparency. This slide includes all the programs identified that are currently at the Department of Human Services, and here are the list of programs identified that would move from the Departments of Education, Health, and Public Safety. Before I pass it off to my colleagues, I want to end by stating the obvious. This proposal seeks to answer questions and feedback heard for years. But in order to do it right, we need a robust engagement process. We need more specific discussions with family, local service providers, tribes, counties, and others. And the way to do that is through dedicated time and dedicated capacity. And that time is now. When we have a network of leaders ready to engage with all of you and Minnesotans who believe that this exercise is important, I will now pass it off to my colleagues, Assistant Commissioners Bobby Burnham and Tiki Brown, to speak about the impact of the proposal.
You're welcome. Commissioner Burnham, introduce yourself for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Minnesota Department of Education. After years of working inside and outside of government, mostly focused on the goal to ensure coordination and access to early care and learning programs that support successful transitions into the K-12 system, I am thrilled we are at this point of proposing a child-focused agency with a key principle being consolidation and coordination of early childhood programs. Through recent efforts funded by the legislature and administrative efforts like Race to the Top, the Early Childhood Systems Reform Effort, learnings from the OLA report on early childhood, and most recently, the work of the Children's Cabinet and the Preschool Development Grant, the state has made significant progress in coordinating and aligning early care and learning programs and supporting transition. Building on this progress and cross-agency programs, we believe consolidating early childhood programs will better coordinate child care and early learning services, resulting in improved outcomes for children, families, and early childhood workforce, improved coordination of child care and early learning provider registration, communication, payment, and ongoing regulatory requirements, aligned administration that allows for centralized funding prioritization, including building reimbursement methodologies for childcare that better support that critical sector, a common application and entry point for families to apply for and be referred to early childhood programs and services. We look forward to engaging our community members, educators, program administrators, in this transition process. I want to acknowledge that we have received feedback from our early childhood special education, or ECSE, partners regarding the transition of Part C services. Part C is listed as a core service that would move to the new agency under this proposal. This would change the state-level lead agency responsible for the state-level administration of Part C from the Department of Education to the new proposed department. This does not change Part C administration at the district or local level. We are not proposing any changes in how these services are currently delivered or who delivers them. Creating a new state agency with the purpose of better aligning programs will not change a district's collective bargaining agreements, and there is no proposed language that would change who is defined as the service providers for Part C. We are eager to continue to engage partners and families on this proposal and work to build the early childhood system that meets the needs of Minnesota and its families. Nearly all Minnesota families are working with one of the highest workforce participation rates in the country, and 98% of lower income families have at least one adult who works, meaning they need access to affordable child care for their young children, and they're juggling to meet their children's basic needs and provide opportunities to help them learn, grow, and thrive. We have made significant progress toward better coordination in our early childhood system, and we believe shifting governance of programs will build on that progress to improve service delivery, support the workforce, and most importantly, better ensure our young children thrive. Now I will pass to Assistant Commissioner Brown to speak to additional opportunities in this proposal.
Thank you, Commissioner Brown. You can introduce yourself and proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Tiki Brown, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Having worked in state government for over 20 years, one lesson I've learned is that for a population or an initiative to be a high priority, it needs to have a clear champion and a shared vision, especially when it comes to cross-program or cross-agency coordination. The opportunity before us to establish this new agency and provide transformative funding to advance opportunities and equity for children and families is an opportunity to make a positive impact for generations to come. We are in a unique moment where leadership is aligned around centering children in their decision making, and genuinely believe that this new agency will provide sustainability of structure for the state to prioritize children and families. Leaders with significant experience both inside and outside of state government in running effective programs, change management, and driving outcomes and progress are supportive and ready for this change. DHS takes equity and outcomes for children very seriously, and often the structure and competing priorities prevent the prioritization and representation needed to elevate the needs of children and families internally in the agency, at the legislature, and with community partners. A new agency would sharpen that focus on children and the work of DHS itself. Specifically, a Department of Children, Youth, and Families will enable the creation of a sustainable central state vision to ensure Minnesota families are able to reach their full potential. The agency will provide the leadership and coordination needed to support children and families by valuing and implementing research-based multi-generation approaches, focusing services for adults who play key roles in the lives of children as a source of meaningful, equitable impact, by prioritizing economic and food assistance programs so that every child has access to culturally relevant opportunities to help them learn, grow, and thrive, by coordinating implementation of a unified statewide network of community resource centers. This also includes creating the structure needed not only to maintain our IT systems that support essential children and family programs, but the authority, collaboration, and leadership structure to transform these systems in an ongoing way to ensure that technology enables coordination of services, whole family, whole child approaches, while making programs easier to operate for our local government and community partners. We know that transitioning our systems into this new structure will be challenging. And we also know from experience in cross-agency IT projects that consolidation and prioritization are essential to these programs. This also includes the full spectrum of age groups for children, which means that we will prioritize youth and focuses on upstream connections with youth rather than costly downstream public safety and correction efforts. Combined with the historic funding decisions before all of us, this new structure is timely. The Department of Children, Youth, and Family will be uniquely positioned to support the historic investments for children, youth, and families that the governor has proposed. We have the opportunity to boldly act in this moment, leaning on previous engagement, research, and the work of other states, because our state depends on the success of Minnesota children, youth, and families. The creation of a new Department of Children, Youth, and Families can achieve a clear front door and a recognizable public face. It will include improved communication outlets focused on children and families, coordinated and maximized funding, aligned outcomes for children and families, and improved access for services. And we have a plan to take our time to do it right and continue to listen and engage with agency staff, our tribal and county partners, and families. Combined with significant investment in children and families, this new department will create a shift that Minnesota needs to ensure equitable outcomes for children from birth to young adulthood. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next on the list, we have Ellery Roski. Good. All right. Introduce yourself when you're ready and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ellery Roski, and I live in Golden Valley, and I'm the parent of two young children. My three-year-old attends a child care center, and I've been at home with my six-week-old since he was born.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Being the parent of young children is really hard. It's a time in a parent's life when we're left alone to figure out how to care for our baby, how to make our finances work, and for most parents, how to find child care that we trust and that supports the way that we want to raise our children. When my spouse and I finally decided to have a second child, we sat down to look at our finances and realized it would be a problem when it was time for me to go back to the work that I enjoyed. Infant and toddler care is so expensive that if we had chosen to send this baby to the same center as my three-year-old, my entire paycheck would be going just for child care costs. That means not paying for benefits like medical insurance or retirement, only taxes. I have a four-year degree, work in human resources, and make about $55,000 a year, and I would work 40 hours a week just to pay taxes. That's absurd. Childcare is not only expensive, it's really hard to find. After months of searching for an in-home provider with an infant spot that at a price that we could afford, we finally found one. But this is an incredibly frustrating time in my family's life when we need resources, support, financial assistance, and help navigating the system. We're left alone to fend for ourselves in this convoluted system. I'm a parent of two young kids, not an expert in government programming. And when I hear that Minnesota depends on children, youth, and families, I know that we need more support to be successful. Going through what I went through and knowing that it's still not over, I think it's common sense to have a department for children, youth, and families in Minnesota to prioritize helping families like mine as we navigate through one of the hardest times in our lives thus far. And to be clear, a family like mine is middle income and better off than many Minnesotans. We still struggle to make much of this work in this time. Having this centralized department would offer support, guidance, streamlined system, funding options, childcare options, and more. This could make this experience incredibly different for us. I'm fully on board with the government working for and with families to actually make this the best state in the nation for kids and families. Having a Department of Children, Youth, and Families is necessary to make that a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rossi.
Thank you.
Finally, we have Angie Tice. Head on up and introduce yourself and proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair and members. Hi, my name is Angie Tice. I'm the Child Wellbeing Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC is a membership association comprised of county commissioners, administrators, and professional staff from across the state. In a state-supervised and county-administered system, our county workforce is the frontline staff, and we see the opportunity, frontline staff implementing policy and regulation that is passed at the state, federal, or local level. We see the opportunity and the tremendous opportunity in this proposal and are uniquely positioned to provide valuable feedback as we consider how best to serve Minnesota children and families while also paying attention to our workforce. Our goal and intention is to better address equity and improve outcomes for children and families in a more holistic way by focusing our efforts on budget and child and family strengthening programs and community partnerships. We desire to better serve Minnesotans and streamline services and supports while working towards shifting the current system that is built around deep-end, crisis-oriented services to one of supporting children and families and community. We have an opportunity with this proposal to build on and design initiatives that promote protective factors and family-strengthening supports, such as those within the Community Resource Center proposal. We see the opportunity, so I'll note opportunities and then some anxieties we have. First up in the opportunities column, we fully support centering equity and lived expertise in the design and implementation process. We see a tremendous opportunity to shape a shared vision and robust collaborative engagement process. There's an opportunity to examine the roles of each intergovernmental partner, our county, state, and tribes, and work towards building a more collaborative relationship that is focused on serving Minnesotans and better doing so. We see an opportunity to assess, realign, and stabilize our financing systems that support this work, specifically in the areas of child welfare and public assistance programming. There's an opportunity to better design and modernize the information technologies that support this work, such as SSIS, and I'd like to thank Representative Hansen for her work on paperwork reduction. And there is a clear opportunity to center data in the role of this work, both inputting data and receiving data and using data to inform practice and policymaking. Finally, there's an opportunity, and I go back to the data piece, at the local level and at the state level. Finally, there is an opportunity to learn from complex initiatives like the Family First Prevention Services Act that have recently been implemented and adjust processes accordingly so that we get it right. While showcasing the opportunities, there's also significant apprehension about a transition to a new agency among counties. In addition to seeing the opportunities, County Human Services are uniquely positioned to share the complexities and inherent challenges that exist in our current structures and with the Department of Human Services. As you might imagine, the details matter, and to county folks, they are extremely important that if we don't get this right, it is likely that the complexities, administrative burdens, and financial gaps will show up at the county door, impacting taxpayers and levies across the state. Most importantly, if we don't get this right, both in the transition to a new STEM and its permanent structure, we might be unintentionally worsening outcomes for clients, including the individuals and families we serve. At a high level, here are some of our concerns. I will note that we have been in conversation also with the department and with the Children's Cabinet and are working to address some of these concerns, so I don't want to give the impression that we aren't being heard, but also feel it's responsible that we note our concerns and apprehensions at this point. We have some concern. We have been engaged. We would like to see a more robust engagement, specifically in the areas of child protection and eligibility. We're concerned about administrative duplicity at the state level, and concern that the new agency will result in multiple doors for the county workforce and a duplication of administrative processes that are already onerous and burdensome. Families don't fit neatly into boxes or administrative organizational charts. Concern about unintended impact with Minnesotans, the workforce, and importantly, financing. We ask, how will the planning process and agency monitor the impact of this initiative on the workforce, state, local, and tribal?
I'm just going to ask you to wrap it up.
And examine existing financing streams that currently could support the work. And finally, we have concern that without deliberate attention and design, the current challenges and dynamics that exist between the state and counties will remain. I'd like to be clear, and in closing, while we as a front line have apprehensions and are cautious about the concept, we recognize and agree with the needs that exist in this area and stand ready to engage and collaborate in a process with the goal of setting a vision and getting it right for our families and our workforce. We are thankful for the conversations to date with the department and the Children's Cabinet and look forward to ongoing conversations and engagement, including a listening session with our membership later this month.
Thank you for your cautious optimism. All right, members, we are running tight on time. We've got about 10 minutes till the end of the committee, so I would just ask you to kind of keep your questions tight if we can. And with that, we'll...
We should see if there's any other public testifiers.
Oh, all right. Is there anybody else in the public who wants to testify? Come on down. You're the next contestant. I always wanted to say that. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Christine Snyder. I'm from Youth Prize. I'm the director of the Twin Cities Opportunity Youth Network. And I just wanted to brief some comments about how excited I am about this. The Twin Cities Opportunity Youth Network is a collective of young adult and adult allies that work with young people that are 15 to 24. So oftentimes we're thinking about this in terms of early childhood. And we need to be thinking about this about the older young people as well. We work with intersectional data. We think about young people in foster care, the juvenile justice system, young people that are experiencing homelessness, parenting young people. And it's difficult to get that intersectional data. And without that data, what we measure, what we don't measure, we don't value. And so we don't know how our children are doing in those systems. We don't know if they're thriving. We don't know their well-being data. This new department could bring all of that data into one house, and we could finally match our population level data to how individuals are doing in each county. And so we don't want to be left behind in the opportunity youth space. We want to just say that this also department is for those young people too, and we're excited about the adaptation of the youth voice, because we know that it's critical that young people are at the table when decisions are being made with them, that they are at that table. So we just want to say thank you, and we're very excited about this moving forward, with one caveat that we would love for conversations to continue about youth homelessness moving over from DHS, and also conversations about the work youth workforce at DEED. Those two are really critical in the opportunity youth space, and it's difficult to imagine how we're not integrating those as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing your experience. All right, with that, members, we will move to questions and comments. Oh. All right. We've got one final test. If you can wrap up in about 90 seconds, that would be great. Introduce yourself, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kirsten Anderson, and as Executive Director of Aspire Minnesota, I'm here to share our support for this proposal, while recommending also that housing and homelessness prevention and children's mental health be considered for inclusion in the newly proposed Department of Children, Youth, and Families. As a statewide association of child and family service providers, our members support children and families in the full continuum of children's mental health, child welfare, and numerous areas of other early intervention and prevention services. They believe in children and families. They're dreamers, innovators, and applaud the concept of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. As children and youth providers, they also envision a future system that is centered on families, using an expansive definition of family, informed by child and youth voice, and responsive to family needs, interests, and preferences. Our members know that fundamental to providing effective treatment and services to a child is to engage and provide treatment to a whole family. I will make my comments short and submit the rest to the record, but just wanted to underscore that we really deeply believe that children's mental health is fundamental to a family-centered and responsive set of services for kids and families, as is the fundamental nature of access to housing and homelessness prevention. So with great applause and celebration of this concept, just wanted to submit those to the record.
Thank you. So thanks. All right. Members, we're going to go over time a little bit today, so we have some additional time for discussion, but my previous request to keep things short and to the point still stands. With that, I'll open it up. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a lot to be said about this and many, many, many questions to be asked. Unfortunately, we don't have that time in committee, so I guess a lot of it will have to be saved for the floor or for
you
later.
We still have some extra time, Representative Hudson. So go ahead and ask your question.
There's a lot of questions, but I'll just state this, because I think my core concern with the direction that we're going by creating a new state department in order to attend to something as personal as children and families is that it's predicated upon a faulty premise. And that is that government and bureaucracy can enter into a space where it doesn't, where the square peg doesn't fit into the round hole. And what I mean by that is that the currency, the mechanisms of family, the reason why families work is because they function with love and intimacy. You know your children, you know your spouse, you live with them, you care about them deeply, you have this tremendous and persistent intimate knowledge of their needs and their desires and their special considerations. And government doesn't have that, and it'll never have that. It'll never have it. And what we're doing here is we're replacing love and intimacy with ideology and bureaucracy. We talk about, you look at this letter of support, it talks about streamlining decision-making power to a single accountable commissioner. So we're taking the distributed self-governance of the family and we're consolidating it and empowering one person who doesn't have that intimacy, they might care in a kind of a general global sense. They might have a philanthropic impulse, but they're never going to love a particular child in the way that a parent loves that child. And therefore, because they'll never have that relationship, it doesn't matter how many laws we write or how much money we throw at it. It's never going to function the way that parental relationship functions. And the other side of that is, of course, the ideology, and it's strewn throughout here. We've heard references to equity and distribution of resources and disparities and this language. And as a goal, addressing disparities doesn't serve a child, a particular child. Children don't need disparities attended to. They need guidance. They need teaching. They need love. They need intimate concern. And as a goal that's going to be pursued by a bureaucracy that's going to report on how well it's doing to achieve the goal of disparities and inequities and racial and economic and this, that, and the other thing. What that's going to create a force that focuses on the numbers rather than things like behaviors, culture, habits, values. Those are the things that impact the lives of individual children. Not aggregate statistics, which is what government will focus on. And we know that because it's what it always focuses on. So I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Representative Hudson. Representative Hicks?
Thank you so much, Chair. I do just want to thank the department for continuing to dialogue about how to get this right. I have really big feelings about our child protection system, how it's working, how it's not working, what's going great, what's not going great, and some of the different pieces of that. And I believe that this is an opportunity to do better. This is an opportunity to take a look at where we are and where we want to be and build it from the ground up to do better. And so I just want to thank all of the different partners involved in continuing that dialogue and having that conversation so we can get this right. It is important that we get it right. As we work through the child protective space, when kids stay with their families, they are more successful. Child protection is traumatic for everyone involved. Everyone. And it is important that we make sure that we do this in a way that brings voices to the table and does better. And I'm excited to move forward in that journey with a great group of committed professionals to do that. So I just wanted to publicly thank all the different stakeholders who have been engaging in that dialogue. Thank you.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I find myself frequently doing, I want to first of all associate myself with the comments that Representative Hicks just made. And, I am really, really excited by this proposal, and I'm proud to be a co-author on it. In fact, as I was mentioning in a meeting yesterday, I literally wrote a final paper for one of my classes in graduate school on this exact proposal, and I got an A on the paper for what that's worth. And I, you know, I think this allows us to achieve a lot of goals. I think that we have spent a lot of time talking about in this committee, streamlining and consolidating services so that we can better serve the people of Minnesota, and in particular, kids and families. And some of you know that before I was elected to the House, I worked at another legislative body that I would prefer to keep anonymous in this state. But I worked there for a long time, and I heard a lot of conversations about the way that, in particular, DHS can do things differently, needs to be structured differently. And, you know, everybody has their own ideas, and I'm sure if we went around this room, we could probably get 20 or 30 more. But at a certain point, we have to take action. We have to step forward and say, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do differently, so that we can do things better. And I think this is a really exciting proposal to get at that. And it also shows that we are prioritizing Minnesota kids and families by giving them a figurative and literal seat at the table. And so I'm really excited about that concept. And, you know, I would say that there are a lot of conversations that need to be had before July 1st of next year and so on. But I don't think the conversations really ever. I think that's sort of part of the purpose of why we are here. And as this new department moves forward and as we are able to sort of get our feet under us on how it's going to operate, I think those conversations will always continue. We will always have conversations about how we can serve folks better, because that's the nature of the game. So thank you.
Members, any further questions or comments? All right, Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair Pinto, for doing, hopefully will be turning out a right way to consolidate. And I've got so many questions, but I've got a meeting with my superintendent from the deaf school in 2 minutes. So I have to limit it to how many questions I can get out in 2 minutes. Main thing is, you know, we're always looking at budgets. And this is proposing, I forget the dollar amount, but quite like a $5 million startup deal for that. And if that's going to include new FTEs, but when you do start doing the consolidating, I'm assuming since we have so many things that are repetitious and done by the same people in different departments, there actually should be a cost savings when the dust settles, possibly. There should be, because we're trying to streamline everything. So my question is, do we try to work up a fiscal note at all on this one to see if there's a cost or a cost reduction in a couple of years from now when the dust settles and we got everything in place? Because I'm assuming we're going to be consolidating, there's going to be less FTEs needed, but that's just my guess.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and Lee Daniels, so a couple process points, first of all, because it gets a little bit to Representative Hudson's point about having questions, too. So the plan is to vote this out to continue it through the process. If this advances, which I certainly hope that it does, it would be in our budget bill. So that's one thing, funding come out of our budget. And at that point, there'll be, you know, further opportunities. So just to say, in terms of this committee, this will be a focus for us. And part of what we have to do is have the one-time money for the transition cost to figure out, you know, exactly how does the transition happen. So, yes, fiscal note, I'm virtually certain, has been requested. Well, maybe not Mr. Berg. Okay, yeah, because we're still, finally, I think, determining the that piece. But there's regarding kind of what the long-term situation will be, we know that there's not a change in FTEs. We heard the testimony regarding that. What this is doing the work in a more effective, strategic fashion. And so I think the key right now is that there is the one-time cost to get the agency up and running and to figure out how that process works. As far as the long-term point, though, I don't think that's exactly the point of this. The point is, really, as it's said on the slide that's on our screen, is to place kids at the center of government and be more effective in how the work is done. So I don't know that we can say that there's going to be a cost savings in the long run. But again, that's not exactly the focus as far as I'm concerned.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair. And there's so many little questions that really need to be answered before this, you know, happens. Like, if an employee is in one department and they're asked to go to another department, are they going to be forced into that, or is it going to be volunteers? And I was with a company that we downsized in 2009, and I lost more than half of my department, and it was not a voluntary thing. It was all, you know, you're done today, see ya. So just those details, so that these people have, that are going to be affected by the new department, will have time to adjust and time to decide what they want to do. But there's so many questions like that. It'd be a lot to put in the bill, but that's kind of questions I've got still, and I know we're running out of time.
Mr. Chair, I mean, thinking potentially that these people are going to keep their same jobs, they would just be reporting to.
Well, yeah. Why don't we do this? I'll just say so. I definitely heard the firm commit. This is not a downsizing, to be clear. This is not about anybody losing their job. As far as sort of who transfers over, exactly how that happens, I'm not sure if there's somebody who can. Yeah, we'll ask Ms. Bailey if we
Director
can.
Bailey.
Not sure.
Chair, Representative, there is language in the bill that requires a 30-day notification to employees prior to transfer. I will just comment and say I think in some places we're hearing like desire and excitement about that. So, but I think in order to get this right, I mean, our goal is better services for kids and families, and in order to get this right, staff are critical. Their expertise is absolutely essential, and so that partnership will be ongoing dialogue for sure. I don't know if my colleagues want to add.
Thank you. No. That's probably good.
Thank you for that. Members, we still have about 5 minutes. I know Representative Daniels might have another appointment to get to, but feel free to continue on in your questions.
There's so many. I apologize. We'll have to come back to it at a later date. But I'm more interested in some of the details, and I'm hoping the overall theme of this new department will streamline it, consolidate it, make it more efficient. And when you're talking about those subjects, theories, it should in the long run work better and save the taxpayer money. And that's my hope. The goal is that we can just do all this and it'll be better for everybody included. Because I've heard so many in the last 10 years or 9 years about the departments having to work different parts of this thing, the safety department, the MDE, DHS. And you know, hopefully when that dust settles, that this will be better, faster, and cheaper.
Thank you for that, Representative Daniels. And I just take a really brief comment. I think that you know, this has been a great conversation so far today. We've got a lot more questions and comments, and we can hash that all out together. But I appreciate Chair Pinto, your leadership in this area, Director Bailey, for all your work, and you and your colleagues have been putting a lot of thought into this over the last few years. And I think, you know, certainly this department would be intended to support and supplement families, children in Minnesota, never supplant the role of a parent. And I think that's just is something that we really need to consider, that some families need more help than others, and we need to be able to give folks that assistance when and where they need it. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let you wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks to members and all.
Representative Pinto, sorry, I missed Representative Lee here on the list.
Apologies, Mr. Chair, and apologies to my colleagues. I guess I just want to tie a lot of like the loose threads that you know, we've been talking about today, and also you know, throughout this session. I said this on the floor that, you know, when we talk about kids, like I think we should go beyond thinking about cost savings and money, and also maybe think about, you know, saving time. And I think a really good example, going back to what Rep. Hicks was talking about, is we really do want to keep families together. And I think when we think about streamlining, that means, you know, making sure that families are able to stay in their homes, because we know children are put in the CPS system when their parents don't have access to stable and safe housing. And so, you know, I also want to make sure that, you know, folks keep in mind, like, when we have one commissioner who is hopefully connecting all the dots and making sure that all the services that our state provides for families, you know, are working in concert, and we like to use the term braided together, right? You know, we're giving kids the great start that they need and deserve, so that we save time and, you know, hopefully, yes, maybe save money on the other end, but really most importantly, making sure that folks get to where they need to go. So, thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Good.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks all for the discussion, and let's keep on having it. And again, this will come back before us in a budget bill, I would expect. So let's keep the conversation going along the way. Thank you to everyone, especially to these incredible folks who have been putting this together. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 2320, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. That's okay, Madam Chair.
Chair Pinto renews his motion that House File 2320, as amended, be re-referred to the House Committee on Education and Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
Nay.
House File 2023. House File 2320, as amended, is hereby re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance.
And Madam Chair, if I can, just a reminder, members, we have a committee tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. We'll run for a couple hours and be back on Thursday morning. And thanks, Madam Chair.
Very good. With that, the committee is adjourned.